Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this nice, beautiful country of New Zealand where it's just starting to turn spring, which will be fabulous for all of those like me who despise the cold, and if it had a heartbeat, I would attempt to kill it. And my very special guest is Mark Stephens. Mark, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Vinny. Glad to be here.
Please enlighten me as to a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
I'm kind of jealous you're in New Zealand right now. I've wanted to get there for a long time.
The grass is always greener on the other side. You've got tyrannical cops, we've got tyrannical cops. You've got fluoride, we've got fluoride. It's the same thing.
Yeah, but you're the size of California, but you've got a tenth of the population? So it's
4 million, and there's like 80 million in California, so like 1/20th of the population?
Well, I think there's about 40 million in California. So, okay, I guess a tenth. I understand. The area I live in, at least I'm left alone. Even as an activist, they tend to leave me alone. Let's see, about myself, I'm author of a book called Adventures in Legal Land, and the new book, which really is, I know I catch heat for this every time, Government Indicted is soon to be out, and it's about my experiences in the court and what I've learned by dealing directly with these people, and because that's basically what I've been doing since like 97 is helping people. Hi, dear. As helping people resolve conflicts with bureaucrats.
And I would imagine that you're rather busy.
Oh, yeah, especially after I did one, I don't know if you heard this, I did one a number of years ago with an IRS attorney named Kimberly Clark, and we posted that, I think, in December of 2010. Well, starting January 2011, I've been doing it basically 5 days a week, almost nonstop. That's what the majority of my day has been for the last few years. I mean, I've been very busy for years, but since that call, it's really ramped it up, and I've spent hours every single day dealing with the IRS and tax agents and prosecutors.
Much scumbaggery going on with those people?
Well, wow. We could fill a 3-4 day show of just talking about all the different. I could pull out my notes and start going through with the names, and I have a lot of this stuff in the new book, of course, but yeah, they tend to really be a good example. We just got Calvin, who does work I work with, and he does a lot of the post-production for the show, and he co-hosts it when he can, just posted a better version of the audio of a hearing that I did with Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live, where I was cut after an hour. And so you mentioned scumbag. I would have to say that Michael King, who's doing the hearing, the hearing officer, would fit that bill. He wound up cutting I was doing it like we are, where I was doing a hearing with the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicle in New Hampshire. And I just wouldn't let go of the issue of evidence of jurisdiction and the whole basis of the complaint against Ian that the laws actually apply to him. And so the hearing officer just couldn't take it anymore. And even though they were valid objections, he went and he cut my transmission.
Sounds like they should change the name from the DMV to the DMFs.
Well, that's the way they tend to be. And, you know, in the prosecutor who did that, her name was Jean Killam. She had it.
Whoa. Her last name was actually Killam.
Killam. You know, I actually just got that. How could I have missed that? Yes, Jean Killam.
You can't make this stuff up, bro.
You know, I always notice the pseudonyms the IRS uses, and I did not get this woman's last name, so I thank you for pointing that out. Jean Killam had filed a complaint in court, and I was helping with that. We had filed for evidence, you know, disclosure. And the day of the trial, she wound up withdrawing the complaint because – and this is – you know, we believe that here we're hitting them every single time. Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? And so she withdraws – the same day, and files the complaint instead with the DMV because there it's not beyond a reasonable doubt and the technical rules of evidence don't apply. And so it's a lot easier to try to ram someone through the system. But after almost an hour of me insisting that the prosecution present some evidence, he wound up cutting me, which is unfair. And so that's a really good video. I didn't get to see him on video like I can see you now. I couldn't see when he was actually going to cut me. But you can watch the video and you can see how he does that. So it definitely fits the bill of what you're talking about.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, when your job is exposing scumbaggery, you're generally busier than most people would ever conceive of.
Yeah.
It's a true testament to just how overarching the just generally throughout society the level of scumbaggery just seems to be growing and overflowing. Sort of like, I don't know, have you ever left pasta on the boil at too hot for too long or something like that, and all the water starts bubbling and just spilling out of the sides of the pot and getting all over the element and stuff like that and threatening to burn the house down?
You know, I've never had them get that crazy where they were going to start, you know, really ramping up the attack against people where they're losing their home or their car or something. They may lose in court, and we usually are able to prevail on appeal. But generally, we've been lucky in that we really haven't, at least with me, we haven't encountered somebody who is going to take things on such a personal level.
So you haven't – have you got any horror stories of, like, the worst of the worst?
Well, to me, what I consider some of the worst is when the stress level is so high and the attack is so unrelenting. And even not that they're at your home, but it kind of breaks somebody's spirit. That to me is the worst. And when they if they actually get away with taking, you know, part of a bank account or something like that. But a horror story that I see is like we had Mike in Idaho. Those who follow my show, he had a – there was a 10-year investigation with the IRS. They wanted him bad for tax evasion. And I worked with him for a couple of hours before his trial. And they were going to call 40 witnesses. 40! And he was able to get the jury to hang during the first trial. And when they retried him, they brought in a ringer from San Diego up into Idaho. And this guy – turned the heat up so bad on this on Mike that just he, you know, from the stress, he just couldn't maintain the, you know, his defense. And so out of, you know, with fear and that he just dropped the ball. I don't mean to blame him. It's just he, you know, that he wound up getting convicted, you know, the second time. And so he's sitting in prison now because of that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just the tactics that are being used by authorities to hurt people. I think people forget that, you know, just because you're not being shot or stabbed or something like that, sometimes being dragged through the mud and being unjustly prosecuted for no good reason, that kind of thing, it can be a real bullet to the head.
It is. I remember there was in one IRS situation where the – I have the – this is something, you know, other people have heard. We have – I went and met with the IRS agent and the supervisor, have them on recorded, knowing they were being recorded because I was in the office, had the agent admit that there was no evidence the guy had a tax liability or was even a taxpayer, and they wouldn't stop. And this is what makes it so – what people maybe not understand, like getting what you're saying, even though there weren't guns – the fact that they wouldn't stop. the family could not understand, and the friends could not understand, like, if the agent is admitting that there's no evidence as a liability that he's a taxpayer, why won't they stop? And it's that absence of reason where you can't make sense of it that is really piling on the stress and making it more difficult. You can't understand. You have no evidence. Why won't you stop? Because normal people like us, normal people can't wrap our minds around that. You admitted you had no evidence. Why can't you stop? And I think if people really understood the psychological impact of this, maybe there would be there wouldn't be so many prosecutions. You know, with being 12 people actually agreeing with these psychopathic U.S. attorneys and prosecutors, because they don't really understand and grasp just how damaging and traumatic the situation is.
Well, either that, or they perfectly well, and at least the attorneys and what have you, probably know precisely how effective their techniques are, and maybe they enjoy it.
Well, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right that on that side that they're sadists. I think, though, for the average person, you know, watching something like this happen or hearing about it, they don't understand. That's why they don't understand why they question so much about Aaron Swartz allegedly killing himself. Because when you're being unrelentingly attacked by these psychopaths, especially when there's no evidence, and they're threatening this kid with life imprisonment, and they just won't stop. I think if people did, and I think after it happened, people started to understand that, you know, and get a kind of a glimpse into this world. And so there was a lot of pressure to have that U.S. attorney fired. But I think if it's more people going to understand that this is not an isolated thing, this is all the time that there's like a post-traumatic stress disorder associated with going through the court system, I think people would be more unwilling to participate in the process as jurors, and maybe, you know, that's what I like to say. I'd like to see if more people understood, they wouldn't be they'd be more reluctant as jurors to convict people in those situations.
Do you feel that jurors are somehow pressured or corralled by the judges into doing specific things or giving specific judgments?
Oh, I think there's, and I can show the evidence that they are. Well, one, the jury, and I go through this a lot in government indicted. We know without a doubt, whether you're in New Zealand or you're in Canada or the U.S., every juror is there on the threat, duress, and coercion. That beyond dispute. You go to jail if you don't show up.
Yeah.
We know for a fact, and I've seen this myself, and I have audio to prove this, the judges are giving criminal – they're basically telling the jury to convict you. So like in Mike's situation where – the applicability of the code is absolutely an essential element of the crime. And the judge, instead of having the prosecutor prove that, which they cannot do, instead of having them prove that, the judge tells them in the instructions that the law does apply. Whoa, wait a minute. The prosecutor, that's an element of the crime. You can't just do that and cover that element of the crime for the prosecutor in one sentence in jury instructions. So – the judge is coercing them to be there, and is, because he's the authority figure, is basically telling them to convict you, ordering the jury to convict you.
Mm. So basically, the jury aren't lawyers, or at least most of them will never be. And when they come in there, they don't know the law, and the judge simply tells them what the law is, even if it's not. And then they convict you. Because they were told by the judge what the law actually is, how it applies, and maybe lied.
Well, what they're doing here is they're substituting the prosecutor's entire burden of proof on an element of the crime. In fact, if you look at tax evasion, the applicability of the code, where am I? The applicability code is the bottom level. Okay, if you don't prove that the code's applicable, you can't prove the code created an obligation. If you can't prove the code created an obligation, you can't prove that I believed that there was an obligation. And if you can't prove I believed it, you can't believe that I willfully failed to file or willfully evaded taxes. So here, it's not that.
Sounds like a whole bunch of BS to me, man. Like, oh, this kind of like ring a ring. I mean, come on. I mean, this is just fraud.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And what happened with Mike, what made it so unbearable for the guy is that, and I heard this, that the judge was threatening him every step of the way that he was going to be punished if he brought up the applicability of the code. Now, they'll tell you that, well, the applicability of code is an element of the crime, but they think it's a given. Like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Wait, time out. An element of the crime has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not a given. If it's on video, that's different. You got evidence. It's not a given. So for the judge to turn around and in the instructions say that the law does apply, even though the prosecutor has presented no evidence, that's criminal. They would say in New Zealand that that's perverting the course of justice.
Well, perverting the course of justice in New Zealand is known as justice.
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
We've got an extraordinarily corrupt judiciary. And what occurs to me is that's why they call it the criminal justice system, because it's just criminals who call themselves justices.
Yeah, it's the same all over. We put in the jury instruction because you can, at least here, you can give the judge him to give the instructions you want him to give the jury. So one of the things we put in there is for the and no judge has done this so far. So we have evidence that even though it's relevant, they won't say it, which is an automatic reversible error. Anyway, one of the instructions has to be is that the jury may not assume that the law applies to the defendant. That the prosecutor, as an element of the crime, the prosecutor has to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, no judge has said this yet. Now, you can say what you want about me, but let's just, if we look at just the instruction, nobody can seriously argue that the law has to be proven to apply beyond a reasonable doubt because it's an element of the crime. It does. The crime of tax evasion doesn't exist without the statute.
And the statute doesn't exist.
Well, the statute exists, but there's no evidence it applies to anybody. And I don't mean just the tax debt. I mean the Constitution and the statutes. And none of it can be proven to apply to anyone. In fact, that's one of the things we were going through in that hearing that I did with if you go to thefreekeen.com or the Free Keen YouTube channel, you can see the video that I did with this hearing officer. And that's all I did. What evidence has the prosecution presented that would prove that the constitutional laws of the state actually apply and that there's jurisdiction to even have a hearing? And you'll see he dodges, he's shucking and jiving all over the place, but he's not having the prosecutor present any evidence. And it doesn't matter, Vinny, if it is, I've done this in New Zealand, and I've had friends do it. I've done it in Australia for years. I've done it in England. We've done it in Canada, and I've done it here in the U.S.
It's the same deal everywhere you go. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. I think we've got a break coming. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. I just spilt coffee all over my desk, all over my studio. It is very moist in here right now.
That's what she said.
Yeah. That's a little inappropriate for FCC-regulated radio. Good on you, son. Mark Stevens is my guest. You can send comments to him at markstevens.net, the sexual content of the Vinny Eastwood Show. And yeah, we're talking about taxes, and you're obviously aware of Aaron Russo, From Freedom to Fascism, and this kind of thing. And what occurs to me is it's really... Whew, catch my breath here. I kind of freak out when all of my technology gets covered in coffee. Okay, what occurs to me is that Aaron Russo did what many Americans basically wish they could do, but didn't have the skill. He made a documentary that was a classic, really, that fully exposed the entire paradigm of criminality behind the taxation system in America. And now it doesn't really lawfully apply to anybody. And the institution of the Federal Reserve in 1913, I believe, happened over Christmas when there were, like, nobody there. They were all home with their families. And only a few corrupt scumbags stayed behind on the payoff and service of the bankers to institute this policy and simultaneously create the Federal Reserve and the IRS. And it's not legal. Well, let me rephrase. It's not lawful to tax people on their income unless it's voluntary. And they're trying to convince people. In fact, they have convinced the vast majority of people that it ain't voluntary, that it is legal, and that there is a law, when there just isn't. How exactly can you live in a system that lies so blatantly and so completely to the entirety of the population and people don't rise up and slay them? Marie Antoinette style. It doesn't make any sense. How are the people so cowardly? And the answer is, it's not cowardice. Somebody asked me the other day, you know, they saw a giant of almost nuclear bomb go off in Syria on a video. And she says, how come people aren't stopping this? Why are they so cowardly? And it's like, well, it's not really a question of cowardice or bravery. It's a question of, are you a man with an army? Can you stop that from happening by force? Because that's really what it's going to take at the end of the day. And forcing the government to come into court to explain themselves, to point at the legislation that that they're trying to enforce upon you that doesn't exist, is a form of force, which makes me think that the people who do it become enemies of the state and are treated almost as such. Do you corroborate that, Mark?
I can't corroborate all of that. I believe that, you know, the idea that there has, you know, even if there was a law, that if they passed a law that said Vinnie Eastwood had to pay 50% of his salary every year or whatever money, you know, it's still, what evidence is there it applies? There's never been any evidence. You talk about, you know, lying. They lied right from the start, whether it's the U.S., Canada, it doesn't matter. That the idea that people could call themselves a government, and they were, there is no government. They're gangs of killers, thieves, and liars. To have a government, you have to have a state. Yeah, there has to be a body politic. And there's no evidence of that because it's been coercive right from the start. The so-called American founders did not provide their services on a voluntary basis. People may have had a choice whether they had Washington or Adams, but they didn't have a choice whether they're going to have government at all. And that's where it all springs from. If you don't have a choice in whether these people are going to do what they're doing, and when everything is coerced, and that's why I'm able to go into Australia and call. You can listen. I have my call of shame on markstevens.net. And I spoke with a prosecutor in Melbourne. And there's no more evidence that the Melbourne laws or Australian law apply to anybody as there is that New Zealand law or Canadian or American law apply to anybody. They just say it does. In fact, I even have this on video, Vin. I have a Tempe City Councilman. I'm confronting them directly. What evidence do you have that your laws apply to me just because I'm physically in Arizona or I'm just here in Tempe? And he says, you want your proof? Here's your proof. We have jurisdiction because we said so. And it all boils down to they use a gun. And it doesn't matter whether it's New Zealand, in Auckland, or whether it's in Melbourne. It doesn't matter. You've got one man telling you or a group of men saying you're going to pay us a certain amount of money. They use the word tax or legislation just to cover up the violence. The idea of government itself is the lie. And it all stems from that. So it doesn't do us any good to focus on just taxes or here or they're misapplying the law. They're not misapplying the law. It's not that they're trying to
quickly applying it. They're very correctly applying the law, is my take on it, because the law is simply a criminal gang with rules. I mean, if the mafia comes up to you and says, "Hey, look, you're going to pay us some protection money," and you say, "Well, why do I have to pay you protection money?"
"Because I said so. And if you don't do it, VJ over here has a bat. And he's going to smash up your entire storefront, okay? You're going to close down your business and we're going to wind up owning you entirely. And then we're going to kill your family, okay?"
And you're like, "Okay, well, I guess I'm going to pay the protection money."
Sounds
good.
And
after the mafioso leaves, guy from the IRS comes in and he says,
"Hey, you owe us about $120,000 in taxes."
And you're like, why do I owe you $120,000 in taxes?
"Because I said so."
"Well, what if I don't want to pay you the $120,000 in taxes because you said so?"
"Well, I got a couple of guys out there in a car, and they got guns, and they're going to come in, and they're going to arrest you and put you out of business, and we're going to repossess your business anyway and throw your family out on the street."
"Well, I guess I'm paying that $120,000 worth of taxes then."
There you go. And that's the way it works. And it's that gun in the room. Under all that paperwork, which when you watch that video of me doing it, you hear any of these call of shames. All I'm interested in doing is I want to get to the gun in the room. So there's a very interesting conversation I had with someone last week and someone in Toronto, and it was a taxing issue. So what you're really saying here is, do you want me to break your arm or break your leg? That's the options that you're giving my client. And at least this one was he saw the error of his ways. He understood that this was wrong. He didn't want to take any responsibility to stop it, though. It's
put it this way: if you see it's actually illegal to see a crime being committed if you can stop it and not do anything to stop it or something like that in New Zealand. You know that somebody's become an accomplice.
Yeah, they did an episode of Seinfeld.
That's basically what's going on.
Yeah, they did an episode of Seinfeld about that where you can't be an innocent bystander anymore. A bystander, by definition, is innocent. You can't make I would like, it's almost like they're trying to mimic a moral law that if you see somebody being hurt, you have, morally, you should do what you can to stop it. But I was not aware that they had that in New Zealand. But it makes sense because it's kind of a standard thing that all these Anglo-American places have. To me, it's just public relations. Well, what do we need to do to make this look good? What do we got to do to convince these people to continue complying with us? Oh, I know. Make it look like we're protecting them. Hey, that's a good one. And that's what they do.
What's the difference between the mafia and the government? When you pay protection money to the mafia, you get protected?
Yeah, if you're buying their beer, like Al Capone's beer, and somebody else tries to muscle in and sell you their beer, then it was I guess the object was that they would, as long as you're buying Al Capone's beer, that he's going to protect his market. But, what I've mentioned before, the only difference between the mafia and or the organized crime and governments, which is the same thing, is governments have better PR. They've convinced you, because at this point, the mafia could not get away with forcing you to put your children into mafia schools. They don't have the public relations to get away with that. But the government thugs, the criminal cartel called U.S. government, and their gangs called states and cities, they can because people have accepted it for so long. And it's as an individual, we feel that we're absolutely powerless. And so they march their children off to the concentration camps called schools, and another generation gets brainwashed. We got to work within the system. We may not like paying taxes. It may be theft, but we got to change the law. No, you have to stop complying with it. And that's why I like the line, Vin. There are no rules if there are no rulers if nobody obeys.
I believe that's true. And somebody said to me yesterday that protesting is not non-compliance. Okay, if protesting made any difference, they'd make it illegal.
Absolutely. So I say, if people are serious, if you're really serious about bringing about a volunteer society and ending this tyranny, you don't want your money, your whatever we were calling it today, but your labor, the product of your labor, if you don't want it being used to kill people 8,000 miles away, you have to stop complying. And I know a lot of people activists will tell you, I'm not advocating breaking the law. I do. If you want to see change, you have to stop complying with the people who are doing this to you. They are human farmers. That's what politicians are. If you want to bring about any meaningful social change, you have to stop complying them. And that means not complying with the tax code. No evidence applies to anybody, but you have to stop paying taxes. There's no way around it.
Mm.
I'm losing – I don't have Vince feed.
It feels like an individual is overpowered, right? And that's the interesting thing is that throughout history, you have a look at it, and it's never been the majority that have actually really changed anything. It's always been pockets of individuals making the big changes, and all the masses just kind of fallen behind. And so what happens is you sometimes I believe that the 100th monkey syndrome slash critical mass or whatever is a real phenomenon. But that means there'd have to be 10,000 Americans doing what you're doing, Mark, simultaneously, beating the courts in order for people to wake up and suddenly realize that the emperor has no clothes. The taxation is illegal.
Well, it's theft.
Yeah.
It's robbery. I like to use stealing because stealing is a politically neutral word. Theft is – but it's stealing. Taxation is stealing.
How is stealing politically neutral whereas theft is not?
Well, I use – because in my experience, the words – when you look up in their statutes, they don't use stealing. They use robbery or theft. They don't use the word stealing. So I like to use the word stealing because it's not a word that I'm aware of has been co-opted by them. So I don't want to leave the impression. That's why I don't talk about sovereignty. I talk about autonomy because sovereignty is just too politically loaded and we want to do away with that system. So I don't want to give anyone the impression when I say it's theft that I'm advocating, they're breaking the law. No, I don't care what laws. I'm looking at what they're doing as immoral. And that it's just wrong from a basic, social standpoint. This is wrong. I don't care what your laws say. Because their laws always say it's okay to kill with lawful authority or legal authority. To me, it's wrong to kill unless it's in self-defense, unless you're meeting force. It's always wrong to initiate the use of physical force. And they always excuse it with their laws. Oh, we said so. Well, how is this not stealing? Oh, because we said so. Oh, okay. Oh, got it. My gun says so.
Yeah. Let's get off this topic because we all know that they're criminals. Okay, we all know that we're slaves. All right, we're slaves, and the criminals are running the penitentiary. Ultimately, that's the reality that we all kind of have to have sink in. And I don't think that it sinks into people quite as well as if you're actually in it, if you actually see the judge breaking the law right in front of you, if you see the cop pulling somebody out of their car and beating up a pregnant woman on the street for no reason, it doesn't quite sink in unless you're that person witnessing it for yourself, because there's an inherent amount of trauma associated with the witnessing of really horrific things. And I think the real problem is that people have gotten too freaking comfortable. They're just willing to think about it, talk about it, see it on radio, see it on the TV or on the radio. But there's a disconnect between people like us telling them that it's going on and having it happen to you.
Yeah.
That's the real difference, ladies and gentlemen. That's what can sometimes motivate you to fight these criminal scum. We'll be right back after the break with Mark Stevens, markstevens.net. That's Mark with the C.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our status have gone. Our aims afraid and told us our standards have gone wrong. The world
back. Welcome back. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's my final segment here with Mark Stevens. And I wanted to get your website out there. It's markstevens.net. It's Mark with a C and Stevens with a V. And what occurs to me as well is I wanted to get your personal story. Is that how did you enter into this world where you're fighting on behalf of people who are opposing the unlawful taxation and government scumbaggery?
Well, I was helping some friends. I was just learning more about it because I had this experience back in Long Island that just led me to believe that it's the amount of money that you're throwing at it. And that just led to more and more research and seeing, you know. So I fell into the whole, you know, patriot type of thing. And when I started challenging a lot of the patriot stuff, I saw a lot of that fell apart. And I came to the realization that there were no citizens, there were no states. The whole thing, all of it, was a lie. And I started helping some friends by applying this information in court, and the results were quite dramatic, where I was having judges impeach, you know, basically declare the witness against me. Every single one was being declared incompetent. I mean, every one. And then sometimes they would throw the ticket out, and sometimes they wouldn't. And that's just how it started. And so once we had a number of tickets that were thrown out, well, they tell their friends, and you kind of, you know, people start, you know, they want you to be able to help them do the same thing. And it just kind of took off from there. I was just doing traffic stuff, and I noticed that it was all taxes anyway, and I started doing more IRS stuff. So the more I just stuck to just the evidence, what facts do you have to prove your code applies? Or do you have any evidence to prove, you know, jurisdiction? Just sticking to the evidence, I was getting a lot of consistent results. But I was also getting a lot of results outside of the U.S., and so, it's like, well, there's something going on here. Why, you know? And you realize it's all the same thing. These men and women think they have a right to rule you because of the law. They don't have any evidence that applies. And they'll, you know, just pay or get shot. And so it just kind of took off from there. And that's where I got a lot of that material for the first book.
Book selling well? Is this becoming a popular issue? Because this is one of my goals in life, is to take what the mainstream media will not cover, and if they do cover it, it's in a soundbite form, which will never satisfy people's hunger for the truth. In these instances, I wish to be able to help, and I'm not anywhere near large enough in terms of the platform of the show to really, really help people in any way, shape, or form. But I can at least get it recorded, documented, and put it down and get it out there to a certain extent. Going to try and make these issues popular, because once they become popular, that's when traction starts building. And ultimately, it means that you've got a big support base that arises out of it. This is what really needs to happen, ultimately, with the quote-unquote alternative media, is to bring popularity to issues of importance so that the people who are listening online can actually turn up and help and or apply these particular lessons themselves and create a movement without having to actually follow any figurehead, without actually being part of any quote-unquote organized structure, because then the government will just come in and cut off the head of the snake and then everybody's fracked.
Right. And you know, what you were mentioning before, the break about someone actually going through it. Now, they may not be the defendant being sheared, but if they're in there watching this, and see, and that's where a lot, I think, even though my show isn't, you know, a very large show either, but we've got people actively involved. So if someone listening to the show has a ticket and goes into court, we can usually get media reps, or people who are like their reporters for the show that can watch. But the other people who are just there with tickets of their own or just watching for friends, they see what's happening. And it happens all the time where a complete stranger will see what happened. Like, holy crap. They will follow us out and ask what, like one of my co-hosts, JT, they've asked him, because he had a ticket thrown out by asking only three questions. And they said, what the hell just happened there? Why did the judge do that? Why did the prosecutor? And so, you know, that starts building the support that you're talking about, because the people who see them for what they are, because they were there, people who were there when I asked at Colby Granville in Tempe, we have jurisdiction because we said so. When they see that, like, oh, yeah, that's where you've got people who would not only teach other people, but they're willing to take a stand usually on their own. And so we've got more people standing up and questioning it.
Mm. Well, there is that case, of course, and a waterfall comes from one drop of water. Look what comes from that. And hopefully this is what will happen in the very near future, because I don't think we have a hell of a lot of time. The reason I believe why this system is global and why the same arguments and things work in courts all over the world is because we already have a world government.
Yeah, the control mechanisms are all in place. We've got a global surveillance state. It's already there. You have global control of money, which is why they're so upset with things like Bitcoin, because there's no centralized authority. You would have to have quite a massive cyber attack to shut down Bitcoin. And even if you did, there's alternatives turning up all the time. So there's the cat's out of the bag. But I think if people see them for what they are and understand that we're not alone out there. There are a lot of voluntarists and anarchists, and anarchy in a classic sense, we just don't believe in having rulers. Rulers are psychopaths. There's a lot more of us out there, peaceful individuals who maintain the belief in the non-aggression principle than the mainstream media will let you think. We're peaceful people. We want a voluntary society, and we're going to use peaceful means to get there and make government irrelevant. We don't believe in bombs and using force, that the means are consistent with the end. And when you see things like Porkfest, where you have Libertopia in a few weeks, you see that there's quite a few of us out there, and that helps. It's completely decentralized. There's no leader to whack. Thank goodness. But we are out there and the numbers are growing all the time. I mean, I've got more people listening to the show every month, and it's growing. And I believe because of the internet, we can get this information out there and people can see things like Ian's DMV hearing, and you can see these psychopaths on YouTube every day, in addition to the police brutality, which thank goodness so many, more people now can see police for what they are, which is just armed thugs with immunity.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree that the alternative media is really rising. I looked at the Google Analytics for my website the other day, and it turns out that 75% of the hits are new visitors.
Nice.
So, it's really getting out there and bringing in new people daily. And this is, I hope, they'll become loyal listeners who will indeed support broadcasts like mine and yours and actually take steps. There's a number of ways to contribute. I mean, think about this. How many agendas of the New World Order are currently at play right here as we speak? Hundreds, thousands, millions even, maybe, right? So that means how many ways can you fight back? Hundreds, thousands, millions of ways you can fight back. You could go into the court yourself and challenge these people. You could do what the Peaceful Streets Projects are doing and follow around cops with cameras and film them whenever they're being brutal and then privately prosecute them. You can protest outside judges' homes, politicians' homes, and things of that nature, as many people in New Zealand are now doing. And as a result, they get called the lowest form of scum imaginable, ironically, by politicians who are, quote-unquote, the lowest form of scum imaginable.
Yeah.
You can host a radio show. You can do a YouTube channel. You can support somebody who's got a radio show or a YouTube channel. You can suggest guests. You can produce. You can – oh, my freaking God. What I really don't like, and I don't want to insult anybody here when I say this, what I really don't like it is that people haven't gotten it through their thick frickin' skulls that the worst thing you can do when you want to start out doing something right, the worst thing you can do is start asking for help right away. Help yourself. Make it freaking happen. Then you realize suddenly, hey, don't actually need anybody else in order to get things done. I actually just take personal responsibility for something, and you realize how powerful you are. Once you realize how powerful you are, and you're simply doing it anyway, regardless of whether or not people approve of you, people start to wonder, man, can I be that powerful too? And it goes on and on and on. This is the way that we're going to beat these New World Order scum, is you have to just, as Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see. Don't sit around and hope that somebody else is going to do something for you. There is no savior. You can save yourself.
Yeah. I have available a lot of ideas on my website. We have a parking ticket study. So it enables people with very little personal risk. You don't even have to see the cop. You just leave your car where, you know, you'll get a ticket and you just take it. We had 50 cases in Australia.
Oh, hold on. Got the feed up a bit too high there, brother. We've got about maybe 30 seconds left to go, Mark, so if you want to quickly finish your story. 20 seconds.
So people can get a ticket and challenge the system on evidence. We've had a lot of success in Canada and also Australia. That's something to do with this little risk, and you can make the same challenges.
I can barely hear what you're saying, Mark. Music's too loud. Thank you, AFR. All right, well, you can check out Mark Stevens' website and get this book, quite likely, off of markstevens.net. That's Mark with a C, Stevens with a V for Vendetta. And we'll see you again sometime, mate. Thank you very much for joining the broadcast.
Thanks, man.
And we'll be back next hour, ladies and gentlemen, with another fabulous guest, allegedly. Welcome back. Can we bring that feed down, please? Thank you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's hour number two. My guest has not shown up, so I guess we're going to try and take some callers if people are keen, I guess. I'm not sure if even the caller line works, but yeah, just kind of left in the lurch. Don't worry. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Now, the person I was going to have on is Vapu Kupinga, and caller line is not yet open. If we can just get that started up, Mr. Producer Man, that'll be nice. And then you guys can call in at 218-339-8525. And I want people to also remind others, and this is one of the difficult jobs for me as being the radio show host and the editor and the YouTube uploader and the everything. excuse me. Apparently, I've now got an associate producer named Mel, who's doing quite a fabulous job, and organising guests for the show. And that's taken one of the thousand or so responsibilities I have on the show off of my hands, and that's quite lovely. But there's things that I need from you, the audience, and what we want to do is grow the live audience so that people, when I say, can you call in, people aren't just listening on archives like the vast majority of people who listen to the show do, and can actually call in. So that's the problem because, when we ask for callers, nobody calls in because there ain't nobody there. So the number is, if you want to prove me wrong, and I hope you do because I love being proved wrong, is 218, especially when I'm being negative, is 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525 to call in American Freedom Radio. And it's the same number for all of the American Freedom Radio show hosts. Okie dokie. Saw a video yesterday of virtually a nuke going off in Syria, and I was like, whoa, man, that should have been newsworthy, but apparently it wasn't worthy of the news. Happened like over a month ago or something like that. Allegedly some dump, like ammo dump or something like that, got blown up. Huge mushroom cloud billowing up into the air, huge quantities of people shouting, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, you know. As you do. And what I found very strange about this is that, look, there's people in the truth movement who were just really, really gullible, okay? Like, you know what this video was posted under? Nukes being fired on Syria, World War III has begun, and nobody's reporting it. Dude, it wasn't a nuke, okay? First of all, here's how you know. The EMP would have wiped out the person's camera. So you wouldn't have heard him say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, oh my God, is there people are blowing up my city. You wouldn't have heard that because the camera would have gone dead. Secondly, you would have hardly seen the explosion because the flash would have been so bright that it would have flared the camera lens. Okay, so this is what people don't understand. You know, it's just the tiniest... tiniest little amount of critical thinking. And you know how many views this video has? Like 500,000 views. 500,000 views. Because somebody claimed it was a nuke and that World War III was starting, and falsely, might I add. People don't know what the heck they're talking about 99% of the time. Hey, I don't know what I'm talking about, but at least I'm freaking honest about it. I know how to admit that I don't know, that I'm not freaking God. I'm not omnipotent. A lot of people don't like that, on the other hand. They're just that foolish. It's unbelievable. You know, I can't fathom it because it's just so stupid that it doesn't even enter into my consciousness. You know what I'm saying? The difficulty here is, when you see stories that have an overblown, and this is the funny thing, you learn to assume that something's BS, just like a normal, a quote-unquote normal person sees something like 9/11's an inside job and they blag it as conspiracy theory straight away without looking at any of the evidence. As a conspiracy theorist, you look at stories like nuke fired on Syria, World War III has begun, and you instantly assume, you know, that's total BS, it can't be true. And it turns out, unfortunately, when you're a conspiracy theorist and you make wild accusations, 90% of the time you're correct. And it really is irritating because you're like, man, I wish that the world wasn't that predictable a place, you know. It is some of the arguments against being a conspiracy theorist is that, oh, you just want to be comfortable thinking you know everything. And it's like, yeah, bro, having the recognition that the government are a bunch of criminal scum that want to kill me and or enslave me and my entire country and sell us out to foreign banks and exterminate the 90% of the population and have the rest of us living under a draconian police surveillance state. That is what I'm thinking just to make myself feel comfortable. You gotta be freaking kidding me. Are you retarded? The answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. There are not a hell of a lot of intelligent people out there. Okay? If you are one of these intelligent people, and if you listen to the show, you're probably one of them. You're not the majority. Okay? Have a look at any of these Justin Bieber / scum Chris Crocker videos on YouTube with the hundreds of millions of hits. Look at Psy's Gangnam Style. He has a billion hits on YouTube. A billion hits. A seventh of the population of the world has watched that video. If you think that intelligent people are the majority, you are deluded. Absolutely deluded. And if you think that knowing about conspiracy theories makes you intelligent, also deluded, all right? I don't know what the hell the parameters of being intelligent are, really, because I'm not smart enough, honestly. And I think that might actually be, unwittingly, one of the parameters of being intelligent, is knowing that you don't know it all, is not acting under every single assumption as soon as that assumption hits you in the face, okay? I think one of my English teachers once told me that the mentality of a quote-unquote redneck is somebody who changes their political views on a dime because of a current news story. I found that really interesting. Right, we actually have some callers. Thank you for proving me wrong. First caller in the 602 area code. You are on the air. What is your first name and the state that you are calling from, please?
Hi, Benny. My name is Dan. I'm calling from Arizona.
Can't hear you, mate. You're going to have to speak up quite considerably.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Only just. You might have to, like, speak up, yo.
Well, I just wanted to get... My name is Dan. I'm calling from Arizona.
What's up,
Dan? For having Mark Stevens on your show.
Oh, yeah.
I've got personal experience that Mark helped me with. And got me out of a scrape in the court system, and I wish more people would have the temerity to listen to him and defend themselves, because it's real activism. It's not pretend.
Mm. I tend to agree, and it's activists like Dan, Mark, who I consider, as a radio show host and as a protest kind of a leader and stuff like that, I do chanting and so on and so forth, but I consider Mark to be the kind of person who does the real activism work, like actually on the front lines, at the coalface, in the courts. That's the real work, because those are the people that have to read the documents and so on and so forth. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Mark's the real deal.
Mm. Any more, or is that it?
Well, that's it, because you can't hear me very well, so I just wanted to say that. Thanks a lot, Benny.
All right. And the second caller that called in hung up while Dan was talking. Okay, thank you very much. Now I'm all alone again. You got to love that. Okay, so back what I was saying as well, and I wanted to indeed pick up on this point, is that is the real activism. And indeed, those are the people that are working the hardest out of all of us, you know, reading documents, going into the courts. Mate, I've been in the courts. I've tried to read these documents. And just that small sort of taste of it that I got was like too much for me. Okay? I'm just your friendly neighborhood douchebag reporter, you know? Just like most reporters that work for mainstream media, I don't know much, you know. But instead of And this is a funny story, actually. I'll tell you this one. This is the time that I nearly got arrested in the courthouse for filming. You know, like they've got security cameras in the courthouse, and they got cops everywhere, and they got security guards, and so on and so forth. They got recording devices in the courtroom, which incidentally have never turned on, because if there was a court of record, you'd be able to sack half the judges and fire them and put them in frickin' jail for the rest of their natural born lives. The cop tried to arrest me. Conveniently, I had some people, some Māori activists, who stepped in this policeman's way and prevented them from arresting me, physically prevented them from arresting me. I was really quite grateful to that. And the mainstream media were there. They were watching. Did they come up and ask any of these activists, any of these people who were actually in court that day, anybody with any authority, anybody who was one of the speakers, about what happened and what it was about? Or did they go to one of the gang members who was there, who had about 6 teeth missing, who was a moron, and spoke with authority about nothing, and ask him to come out and make comments? You bet your bottom dollar they did. That was was an experience to me of just going, you know what? These people really are evil, deceptive, lying scum. Okay? That's what mainstream media are. And if you don't see that, you are blind to the truth. Now, I had this this feeling the other day, that the responsibility of a position being in radio is such that you can't, in any way, shape, or form, shirk it. And you must indeed speak to the people. Because I had a lot of people criticizing me and telling me to do this, that, and the other. And I started getting very angry and trying to argue with them. And then I realized something. Oh, my God. You know what would happen if you stopped listening to your listeners? They'd stop listening to you. That's not cool. I kind of feel like I hear somebody on the line. That's not Vappy Kupinger, is it? No? Okay, I thought not. It was kind of strange. I hear something in the background there, and there's nobody on the lines or anything. Just my imagination. And also, this whole element of getting into the alternative media is not that hard, folks. It's actually really easy to get into the alternative media. It's as simple as going to YouTube.com, typing in your email address and getting a YouTube account. That's how I started. I see so many people out there who say, I want to start this big organization. I want to do this, that, and the other, and such, and blah, blah, blah. And who's going to help me? And, you know, they're surprised nobody helps them. Dude, you've got to help yourself, okay? Do you have any idea how many years I spent on the streets filming activists and going out this? Like here's the easiest thing in the world to do. You want to be alternative media? Attend protests. Attend protests. And film them. And then after the protest, or before the protest, find those people that are holding megaphones. Find those people who were speaking through microphones. Anybody who had an amplified voice, who was a speaker of some kind at that event, I can guarantee you, has extraordinary quantities of information to share with you, and hence with any potential people who might watch said video. All right? And if there ain't no protests in your particular area, if there's really nothing going on, go to a council meeting. All right? Every small town, no matter how small, has council meetings. And that's where a huge quantity of criminality and scumbaggery actually goes on. And you will find out, just through sitting through a couple of council meetings, just how corrupt your own little township actually is. Don't speak up. Don't try and interrupt me. Just be there. Just film. You know, because 99% of the job of activism in alternative media is just showing up. You know? Just show up. Because look at it this way.
activists took the trouble to attend these protests, attend these public meetings and what have you, is alternative media. All you're going to do is show up with them and film them and make sure that they get out there. Pretty simple. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show where the music never stops, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Yeah, it's a real bugger when you call your guest in the morning right before the show and organise a time for them to come on, and then they're not there on the number that they said that they would be at, and when you call them and then you're left all alone on the air, and then when people call in, they can't even be bothered waiting in, on hold for 60 seconds so you can get to their call. Yeah, as my second caller did. You know, that's a frustrating thing, isn't it? So please, ladies and gentlemen, ring in if you actually have something to say and you're willing to hold on the line for more than 60 seconds. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 is the number to call. Now, I also wanted to try and give like a little lesson here for would-be YouTubers / radio show hosts or whatever. Because, I mean, basically, I claim that I don't really know anything about anything, but when it comes to actual alternative media, making your videos, doing your radio shows and that kind of stuff, I know a lot. I've got a lot of experience. Is 6 years a hell of a lot of experience? Is being number one in New Zealand a hell of a lot of experience? Is going to a protest and having heaps of people come up to you and recognize who you are, about 10% of the crowd of activists and people who actually attend protests knowing who you are and recognizing you, that kind of thing. Is that knowing a lot? Is that doing a lot? You bet your frickin' ass it is, man. It is evidentiary and it is elementary, my dear Watson. I do know what I'm talking about in that particular case. So, you know. If you want to call in and you want to start getting into activism, media or some description, call in 218-339-8525. And we have Chris in Florida. You're on the air, Chris.
Hey, what's up, Ben? Can you hear me?
Not really. We've got some real weird stuff going on with the phones today, Chris. It's like, everybody's real silent.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to talk really loud.
Oh, yeah. Well, just bump it up just a little bit. I'm just turning my volume up so I can hear. I mean, the audience might not be able to. But anyway, go for your life, mate. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard the other caller on there, and I could hear him pretty clear. So maybe it's on your end. If you
want,
I'll talk.
Well, you're coming through clearly right now.
Run through a couple points that I had. Because I'm glad you had Mark Stevens on. I was familiar with his stuff. And it's not really a rebuttal that I had, you know, about what he has to say. But there were a few things when you go down that road of, you know, going without any government at all. And the thing that I would say is that in America specifically, I think I could really only speak to that, would be that the founders wanted a small government, and they wanted it limited. And what we have now is a corporate, you know, because of 1871, a corporation. And, you know, it was a simple idea, and there was a system of checks and balances, and the federal government was never supposed to get as big as it did, and there weren't supposed to be millions of statutes and all kinds of regulations, and I don't think they ever envisioned driver's licenses and people getting pulled over and hauled into, you know, courtrooms to pay, you know, these little penalties for, you know, speeding or, you know, being stopped and told that they were, you know, using the public ways and you know, being stopped and against their right to travel. And I think what people should actually do is they should read the Magna Carta, the Mayflower Compact, then read the Declaration of Independence, which is the founding document, followed by the Articles of Confederation, the Bill of Rights, and then the Constitution, which is the governing document. And then read the philosophers and the authors that they were actually inspired by to write the thing that, that they drew from, which would be Alexis de Tocqueville, Hobbes, John Locke, Montesquieu, and then see what made this government different than all the others. And there was one thing that was never supposed to lead to tyranny that made this government different from all the other ones, and why all these little tin pot dictators and democracies that they're trying to set up aren't going to work, is that they believed in providence and a transcendent moral order that undergirded the Constitution. So even though it wasn't a Christian government, it reflected those principles. And that point about a transcendent moral order was very important, and that idea of providence. So I think people need to just go back to the basics first, because let's say another country attacked our country and we didn't have a government. You know, that's one thing, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not fully
Could I interject here, Chris?
I understand his point.
Chris, could I interject here for a second?
Because
sure. One of my mates is very much a fan of totally limited government and basically no limits on commerce or anything like that. So if the government wants to sell a state asset, he thinks that's a very, very good thing. So, you know, because it's less power to the government, more power to the corporations. This is how he thinks. Now, in theory, if you give the power to private enterprise and keep the government out of its business and stop it and stop lobbying government to act like a monopoly, that's actually, in theory, a really good move. But the problem is that theory doesn't work if you include the element of scumbaggery. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's my argument. You can't have people having no restrictions on them whilst the element of scumbaggery still exists and have no power to actually challenge it. And so whatever great ideas or great theories that the founding fathers had, it didn't specifically outline scumbaggery and that kind of thing, did it? Because I think that if I was to ever pass legislation, I would only pass two laws and never again pass another law. First law would be the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, and the second law would be the Prohibition of Legislation Act, to prohibit anybody from passing any more legislation ever. Okay, because as soon as you suppress the scumbaggery, you suddenly don't need any more legislation, because what does legislation nowadays actually connote and accomplish and help? Scumbaggery!
Right. And I want to say one other thing, Vin, that a lot of people, I think, misquote sometimes. You know, they say that the Constitution, you know, that the president can suspend it, you know, during martial law. The Constitution can never be suspended. They can only suspend habeas corpus. And, you know, sometimes people mistakenly say that. But it is the supreme law of the land, and no matter how many, you know, BS statutes and things that they pass, you know, there's really only one basic principle, and that was from the beginning, you can be pretty much be free to do whatever you want to do as long as you don't hurt anyone else or their property or use fraud in your contract. And that was the whole law. That was it. And then your individual rights came from private property. And that's another reason why we kind of need a government, because, you know, Adam Kokesh, when he did his march on Washington, D.C., and he said, well, I should be able to go there and, you know, load a gun and not get arrested for some imaginary line that I crossed. Well, yeah, it is an imaginary line, but so is your property. You know what I mean? Your individual right comes from your private property. That's where individual rights come from. I mean, these are just basic things that people need to kind of wrap their heads around, and then kind of, if they want to come up with solutions, go from there, in my opinion. That's what I think. Yeah. These aren't long documents, you know, to read. If you want to get into the philosophers and the things like that, you know, well, yeah, those are books and stuff, but, you know, it's all to your benefit. And there's a lot of good movies and things on YouTube. There's one about the 1871 Act that somebody put together that's really good that I just saw the other day. I don't know what the name of it is, but probably if you put that in the search engine, you could check that out. And I would start there.
Now another argument that's put forward, let's say,
I hope people could hear me, because I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you, Vin.
Okay, well, I'm sorry for that, Chris. Yeah, there's something strange going on with the phones and everything. We're kind of working on it 24/7 as we speak at the network there, and also got to give big ups to our producer Adam, trying to deal with everything he's dealing with right there. He's kind of he's taking it all on the chin, and all the whole network on his shoulders at the moment.
Can
so
you
know, everybody
question,
needs to give homage to that, to give homage to the man from Cali. Oh yeah. And I was just thinking about this the other day. A friend of mine put a Facebook post up, Chris, and she said, there's a difference between doing what's legal and doing what's moral, right? So, and I postulated that to take away a family's home, even though it's half paid off because you missed a single mortgage payment, is immoral. And then somebody comes back and says, well, you actually volunteered and went into and signed that mortgage contract. Therefore, them kicking you out of the house isn't moral because you agreed to it. Yeah, really? Did the bank fraudulently or honestly have that money before you signed the contract? And the answer is they didn't have it. They just made it up as soon as your signature was on there. That's fraud because there's no consideration. They right. don't stand to lose anything by loaning you out your entire mortgage. So is it moral for somebody who's perpetrating fraud against you that you agree with to take your private property, even though it's half paid off and they don't stand to lose anything? I don't think that's moral at all. What about you, Chris? Do you think that's moral?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, that makes me think of there was this really good movie that was done in the 90s that they just reran called Election. And at the beginning of the movie, it's with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon. And he asked the class, what's the difference between ethics and morals? And they never get an answer. And it kind of leaves you to you know, understand the difference between the two, you know, yourself. And that's kind of a perfect case in point. You know, the difference between an ethical dilemma and a moral one, and where the two meet. And, I think the good news about it is these are deeply complex issues, and we're definitely exposing or picking the scab back, peeling it back of the problem. And we probably won't solve it in this conversation between the two of us, but the fact that we're talking about it is very important.
Well, and this is something I was talking about behind the scenes with one of our guests yesterday, is that he's really concerned about his friends. Like, he'll go out drinking and playing pool with them, but you never actually have any real conversations. You never actually develop anything. It's all about beer and the P word that rhymes with stussy. And it occurs to me that, you know, you actually really do have to surround yourself with who you want to become. You know what I'm saying, Chris? Because you actually have to have these kind of conversations that we're having now on a daily basis, with as many people as you possibly can,
in order to develop yourself, in order to change this whole paradigm. Because I think the real problem with our societies as we've seen them now is that you or I could go out to a supermarket and see a mother there who is buying her kids a whole bunch of aspartame-containing soda pop drinks and a whole bunch of GMO corn or something like that. And if society was at the point where people would be accepting of this kind of conversation, we would go up to that woman and say, you know what? You're feeding your kids formaldehyde. When it hits room temperature, which as soon as your kids drink it and it processes in their gut for a moment, that aspartame, that artificial sweetener in that Coke, is going to turn to formaldehyde in their gut. And you see that GMO corn that you're buying your kids there? It causes cancer in rats. And there was a farmer who put two cobs of corn in his barn where he's got some rats and some mice. And after a year, the normal organic corn was eaten almost completely by the rats and mice, and the GMO corn had not been touched. You're feeding your kids something that even rats wouldn't eat. In a real society with real people, and Chris, thank you for your call, that conversation would result in that mother going, oh my God, you're right. I'm going to stop poisoning my kids deliberately. Is there anything else out there that's not poisoned? Why, yes, yes, there is. Here's such and such a solution. Good on you. Problem solved. But it's not like that yet. It's because we're not saying enough yet. We'll be right. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. I'm not sure if I reiterated this, but I need you, the listeners who listen live, to tell people and spread the word on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or whatever, to encourage people to actually listen to this show live. Okay, if you're listening to me now, right now, I need you and I need your help. Please go to wherever it is you post up your information, wherever it is that you jam out your information, emailing out to people, doesn't matter. Just tell people what time the show is on and encourage them to listen in. I mean, we ain't got no advertising budget here. In fact, I haven't seen a dime from the Blue Shield advertisements for like a good on 6 months. The hell's the point in that? Okay, and I don't know what the real problem is or anything like that. But anyway, call in line is still open right now, 218-339-8525. And for those of you in New Zealand or elsewhere in the world, it is a US number. So there's like some kind of a prefix or a suffix or like an 01 or something like that you put ahead of it. And having international callers would be really cool, you know? And I do like this whole opportunity of kind of like pick and mix bag, you know, like a caller can call in from Florida or Arizona or from New Zealand or Australia or whatever. And we can just, you know, rap about some stuff, man. What's the problem with that? Getting really sick of people who, I don't know, they think they're above their listeners. And that's really sick to me, all right? Because, basically, they wouldn't have a job unless their listeners were listening. You know, like we got this talk radio show host in New Zealand called Michael Laws. He disrespects his listeners so bad, it's not even fun. You know, hangs up on people, insults them, etc., etc., etc. And it's just disgusting. You know, you shouldn't do that to people who've you know. I mean, essentially, as far as I'm concerned, if you're listening to me right now, you're donating me your time. And in essence, as a moral, as an ethical person, whatever the bridge between moral and ethical is, of course, I feel obligated to give you some time to speak, you know, and actually listen without interrupting you or going on a rant and then telling you that I'm sorry I'm ranting and I promised I would take your calls. That's not my style, baby.
And there's a lot of frustration. I don't know what I'm talking about here. Please call in 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. And make sure to remind people to listen to the show live. The time will be 3 till 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So if you're on the West Coast with Snoop Dogg, that'll be about the time that you're going to be listening to this show, yo. Just when your kids get out of school, and just before you get home from work. And I know I've got a bunch of listeners that listen while they're at work on headphones, so that the boss doesn't find out. Good on you. That's the spirit. And 4 till 6 Mountain Time. So if you're on Montana. Which is incidentally a name of a, I think it's Montana's on Mountain Time, if I forget. But anyway, Montana is also the name of a Jamaican tanning salon. Get it? Montana. And that'd be 4 till 6 p.m. And if you're in Texas, if you're stuck in traffic on the gargantuan highways, outnumbered 4 to 1 with pickup trucks, you can tune in. From 5 till 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And here's the deal. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com to listen to the show. I've listened to a lot of networks, during my time as a truther, as an activist. And the AmericanFreedomRadio.com stream is 128K per second. Okay, the average that I've seen on other networks is between 32 and 64. So it's between four times and twice as good a quality to listen to on the air as anybody else. Okay, there's a very little scratchling BS that's on the air that I hear on so many networks that even are larger and have more listeners than AFR, have lower audio quality than we do on this network, okay? That's true testament to you don't need a cast of thousands, you don't need a $1 million budget in order to make the best quality radio and alternative media. You just got to have some talented people, and believe me when I tell you, there are some talented people on this network. And you need some people with some skill and some experience behind the boards, which we have here in droves. And, you know, there might be some problems. Maybe we're not quite up to date with archives, but, you know, we're working on it. We're getting that stuff solved there. Kevin, thank you very much for your hard work. I hope you're listening to this. Now, if you're on the East Coast, it's 6 till 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, so instead of watching the 6 o'clock news, trust me, this show has better information than the 6 o'clock news. I can say that with authority because I've never watched the 6 o'clock news, and therefore it's probably not relevant. And if you're in the Uber Kingdom, the UK, it's 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. All right, so if you were a late night conspiracy theorists, which a lot of us are, you know, because you're up late at night smoking a joint and watching like about 7 documentaries or something like that about how the New World Order is going to kill you with radiation, and so you should smoke weed to protect yourself from it. 11 till 1 o'clock in the morning. And in Europe, it's midnight till 2 a.m. In that same time zone, I believe that even includes Tunisia and North African countries as well. You know, this show's pretty global. We've had one of my listeners from Tunisia to come on and talk about these sorts of things, like the revolution that happened there. In New Zealand, and there's a whole bunch of other time zones that I don't quite get, but in New Zealand, and this is the real challenging part, is that the time zones change when daylight savings does. So as soon as we hit daylight savings for springtime here, for the first hour, it's going to be like, well, at the moment anyway, it's 10 a.m. till midday.
And then one time zone changes either in the US or New Zealand first. I don't know where it is. And then we get pushed back an hour, so it becomes 11 to 1. And then another person's time zone changes. It might be New Zealand second or America second or I forget which. And then we get pushed back another hour. And so in the summertime in New Zealand, more or less, it's midday till 2 p.m. But for right now, in the dead of winter, it's 10 a.m. till midday. So I really do wish that people would go to the homepage of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. The time zones are written there, I think right in the middle of the homepage for you to look at, because, you know, it'd be really, really nice if we had people listening live in droves to this radio show, because there's so much going on that really it's difficult to actually kind of, you know, catch up on archives sometimes. Incidentally, if you subscribe for a dollar or more a month, preferably $5 a month, you know, some people are subscribed for 10, 20, well, some people are subscribed for 50. Some people $50 to $100 a month, you know, that kind of thing, just to support the, you know, the work that I do every single day. Unfortunately, I can't really, you know, send you things like T-shirts, cups, DVDs, and stuff like that, because, you know, just running the radio show and going out there and being an activist and filming all these public meetings and protests, which no matter how many freaking cameras are there, nobody ever freaking puts them up online. It's just so frustrating. You know, I have to do this all by myself. All right? That is really, really frustrating. I wish I had like a second internet line, because there are so much things that I need to upload, but I don't even have the time to upload them because I got a show to do every day for a full 2 hours. All right? And that's what happens with all your donations. Ladies and gentlemen, you just pay the internet, pay the rent, buy some food, buy some gas, and that's about it. That's really all I've got the resources to do. To be able to, I wish I could do more. And in order to do more, I need more. You know, I think I've proven myself worthy. Okay, you have a look at the featured interviews page on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There are the A-list of the tippy-top A-list on that page. Just Google featured interviews, Vinnie Eastwood Show, and you will come up with the link to that. All right, you know, you got your G. Edward Griffins, you got your Lindsay Williams, you got your Gerald Celente, and goodness knows how many other people. And the reason why I do all this is because, well, there's really nobody else in New Zealand actually even really having a crack at it to this extent. And I want to create this platform and in order to give New Zealanders and the activists that live here adequate coverage. They need it, okay? I'm going head-to-head with the mainstream media, and I'm beating them. I'm actually beating the mainstream media. Have a look at the YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media. It's got more YouTube subscribers than any mainstream media outlet in the fracking country by far. By far. By far. Okay? I'm beating the pants off them because they're useless, pathetic scum who wouldn't know how to use a camera or upload a video if their life depended on it. If a man had a gun to their head and said, look, bro, you've got to support the people of New Zealand. You've got to get their voices out there or I'm going to shoot you. They go, ooh, bang, and they die because they're that freaking useless. I would get the job done and I would survive as I have been doing. Support me at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Subscribe or donate today if you please. See you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.